KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, our Monday morning politics roundup. On a trip to Asia this weekend, President Donald Trump again downplayed evidence of Russia's interference in the U.S. presidential election, saying he believes Vladimir Putin's denials. Former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper pushed back yesterday on CNN.
The threat posed by Russia is manifest and obvious and has been for a long time. And to try to paint it in any other way is, I think, astounding and, in fact, poses a peril to this country.
This hour, we talk about the president's Asia trip. We'll also get the latest on the GOP tax plan and the sexual misconduct allegations against Roy Moore, all coming up next after this. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on our Monday morning political roundup, President Trump downplays Russia threats, and the GOP defends its tax plan, and Roy Moore threatens to sue. Speaking in Vietnam over the weekend, President Trump said he took Putin at his word about Russia's interference in the 2016 presidential election.
I believe that President Putin really feels, and he feels strongly, that he did not meddle in our election.
The president later backed off those comments after pushback from the intelligence community. And here at home, the House is expected to vote on a major tax bill this week. But a new congressional study contradicts President Trump's claims that the plan would benefit the middle class, but not the highest earners. Here's House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
Speed of light in the dark of night and back rooms without even their own members. And what an insult to the intelligence of their own members. What an insult to the intelligence of the American people as they make an assault on the middle class.
And Alabama GOP Senate nominee Roy Moore now says he will sue the Washington Post over its story alleging that he pursued sexual relationships with teenagers when he was in his 30s. Here he is at a Sunday campaign speech in Huntsville, Alabama.
I've been investigated more than any other person in this country. To think that grown women would wait 40 years to come before, right before an election, to bring charges is absolutely unbelievable.
We'll talk about all that in this hour and more with my guest, Clara Jeffrey, editor-in-chief of Mother Jones, who's here with us in studio. Good morning, Clara.
Good morning.
And Michael Warren, senior writer at the Weekly Standard, and he joins us from Washington, D.C. Welcome, Michael Warren.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have Bloomberg White House editor Mike Dorning, who also joins us from the nation's capital. Welcome, Mike Dorning.
Glad to be here.
Well, welcome to all of you. Glad to have you all aboard here. And let me begin, if I may, Mike Dorning, with you. And let's talk about this bromance between President Trump and Vladimir Putin. It would seem at this point that the president is backing off from those remarks that he made. Where's the pushback coming from, largely his own intelligence services? Because he made a kind of dichotomy between intelligence leaders during the Obama administration and those under his administration.
Well, I think the pushback has come from people like John McCain, who tweeted it saying that, you know, he would believe the U.S. intelligence agency's combined opinion over a KGB colonel, the KGB colonel being Putin, and also some former Obama intelligence officials. But I think in general, the intelligence establishment, the more foreign policy hands in the Republican Party and some of the Obama people speaking more publicly have pushed back hard against that, and he's backed off a bit. His general point, though, was he didn't want to belabor the question of the election meddling and would rather move on to other things in relations with Russia.
Well, he was also being criticized for being played. Nevertheless, he has gone on record as saying he wants to work with Russia largely because he wants to work on Ukraine and Syria and North Korea and terrorism. In other words, he has the highest and noblest pursuits here. At least that's what he's presenting to the public.
I think that is the way he presents his case, and certainly probably one of the ways he thinks about his case. Obviously, the corollary is he doesn't want to give additional attention to charges of Russian meddling in the election that then have been fueling the independent counsel's investigation of his own campaign's contacts with the Russians. So there's a sort of a personal political goal here that is informing his decisions and the way he paints things with Putin.
Well, Michael Warren, it's a strange kind of navigating, because on the one hand, he's saying no collusion or tweeting no collusion repeatedly. And yet, on the other hand, here's this investigation into collusion and obstruction of justice and all the rest of it. You know, Jeff Sessions actually recusing himself because of conversations about Russia. All of that has come down. And yet the president seemingly credible. It's also strangely reminiscent of George W. Bush when he said, you know, I looked in his soul and I saw truth there, or something to that effect. But far more serious because of the Mueller investigation.
Yes, and this seems to be something that all presidents, at least the last three presidents who have been around when Vladimir Putin's been in charge in Russia, seem to fall prey to. And administrations seem to think that Vladimir Putin is someone they can work with. We'll see if that works out for Donald Trump. I think that there's a conflation that the president is doing here, which is, again, as Mike was saying, kind of conflating his own personal and political concerns, the concerns that the idea of Russian meddling takes away from his victory, sort of gives credit to somebody else other than him, and then conflating that with perhaps legitimate foreign policy goals of trying to work with the leader of a very large and very important country within the world. There's this other added element which ties in with the Mueller investigation, which is the question of whether or not the Republican platform, the Republican Party's position on issues like, say, Ukraine, arming the Ukrainians who are fighting against Russian allied fighters in that country, if that was influenced by someone like Paul Manafort, who was, as we now know, on the take with some pro-Russian Ukrainian political forces in that country. That complicates all of this as well. And you do get the sense that the president wishes everything could just go away. Problem is, there's a special counsel investigating it, and it's not going to go away, at least not anytime soon.
Well, Clara Jeffrey, when he makes these remarks about believing what Vladimir Putin is telling him, it seems like it would only exacerbate his problems, wouldn't it?
It would seem so. I mean, I agree that I think part of it is the ego involved in wanting to portray the fact that he won the election. However, there's been an incredible 10 days of bad news on the special investigation front. You know, not only was Manafort indicted and Papadopoulos pled guilty to lying to the FBI about meetings with Russians, but, you know, Carter Page has confirmed that many Trump officials were informed about his overtures to the Russians, including Sessions and Hope Hicks and J.D. Gordon and Corey Lewandowski and Sam Clovis, which then caused Sam Clovis to not take his presumed post in the Trump administration. You know, and that is just a small, you know, it looks, there's been reports that Flynn, Michael Flynn, and his son all also face indictment. So, you know, in the background here, amid all this other terrible news and against...
Although, forgive me, the Flynn indictments may have more to do with Turkey than Russia.
Yes, well, that's true, too. I mean, if, you know, the remarkable story of Michael Flynn and Michael Flynn Jr. perhaps agreeing to take huge payments to kidnap a Turkish cleric and deliver him back to the regime that is opposed to him, is just an insane story. And were this any other administration, it would have, you know, flooded the headlines for weeks. But there's so much crazy going on that it's hard to sort of keep hold of any one piece of it.
Michael Flynn was, of course, at one time top national security advisor, and he was at a dinner sitting next to Vladimir Putin, apparently, and getting a fairly sizable cash honorarium for that. Let me, we'll hear from our listeners, no doubt, about the ongoing concern about all this. But what do you think, Clara, if I get you to weigh in on just what is accomplished in this trip, particularly in light of the fact that the last lap of this trip is with Rodrigo Duterte, who has had these extrajudicial killings in large numbers, probably in the thousands at this point. I mean, does this affect the Teflon nature of this president?
I mean, the only upside for Trump that I can see from this trip is that America was too busy paying attention to elections, church shootings, and sex scandals to see what an embarrassment it was. I mean, he got after, you know, demagoguing China throughout his campaign, He sort of left China talking about how big the red carpet is. And China, meanwhile, is really moving into the diplomatic and trade space that we are vacating. The rest of the Asian Rim countries announced a trade treaty without us. He praised a murderous dictator. He gets into a tweet war with Kim Jong-un, you know. He was fact-checked on the podium by the Prime Minister of Australia. I mean, it's...
Something else here that was a headline that he was chuckling when Duterte called the journalists spies in a meeting in Manila.
Right. I mean, again, there's just so much that's embarrassing that you lose track of any one piece of it. I didn't see anything particularly helpful to Trump coming out of this trip. Certainly not helpful for America.
Says he's making billions of dollars of deals with the Chinese.
Yeah, well, he's also vacating billions of dollars of deals in telecom and renewable energy and a whole bunch of other trade that we could have had or could have had a stronger hand with China.
Well, we said we were going to cover at least a couple of major news stories here, and certainly President Trump's trip to the five Asian nations is one of them. But let me move into this whole Roy Moore story because we have breaking news on that. And Michael Warren, I want to go to you on this. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell actually today said that Roy Moore should step aside from his campaign for the U.S. Senate. And for listeners who aren't aware of what we're talking about here, there have been charges that came about as a result of a woman who spoke of her being a child and being essentially molested by Roy Moore, and a lot of talk about his being a pedophile. And then on the other side saying this is all the Washington Post and Bezos and Roy Moore saying he's going to sue. How do you see the political configuration moving forward here? Michael Warren.
You have to imagine that Republicans, the Republican establishment, Mitch McConnell, earlier this a couple of days ago, you had the Republican National Senatorial Committee withdraw its funding, probably has little to no bearing on Roy Moore or whether or not Alabamians will go to the polls and vote for him or certainly leave, given these allegations, leave his camp. Moore operates in kind of an interesting sphere that makes him somewhat less susceptible to these things because of the nature of where he is within the party. He is an outsider in many ways, the same way that Donald Trump is within the party. And something like Mitch McConnell, as you just said, coming out and saying that he should step down, following, I should say, several other Republican senators saying the same thing over the last couple of days, it's sad to say, but probably strengthens him. I think the one X factor in all of this is President Trump. Trump is very popular in Alabama. Again, like Moore, thought of as an outsider. But I'm told by people around the president, and it's evident from the way the White House has been reacting to this story over the last couple of days, that the president, being in Asia, has sort of stayed out of it, stayed on the sidelines, trying to see if there are any more accusations, if there's evidence that exonerates him, as unlikely as that seems, and trying to stay away from it, not to get involved in something that that could be seen as probably the McConnell news will be seen as Washington or national Republicans, establishment Republicans trying to interfere. I think they're setting themselves up for a big political problem, maybe not next month during the special election, but certainly in 2018 when every single Republican elected official and candidate is going to have to say, what do you think about an accused child molester being a part of your party and perhaps even a United States senator.
Well, Clara Jeffrey, we've got Steve Bannon on the other side of this. He was a big Moore supporter, and there have been 30 sources that have been referenced in the Washington Post story. So where can this story go at this point, especially with the lawsuit threat coming from Judge Moore and saying essentially none of this is true?
I will eat my hat if Roy Moore sues the Washington Post. It's just not going to happen. It's an idle threat. It's the kind of threat he makes all the time.
But what about Bannon, though, in all this? I mean, he was talking about the Bezos Washington Post.
Yeah, I mean, Bannon has sent down two reporters from, quote-unquote, reporters from Breitbart to go kind of
discredit the woman. Yeah.
Discredit it. And what they found was basically that the Washington Post engaged in investigative reporting. 30 sources contemporaneous reports from the girls to, you know, parents and friends at the time or later. These are not allegations. We also have a former co-worker of Moore's in the district attorney's office who said that, you know, that her office mates thought it was really creepy the way he would go to high school football games and malls kind of looking to pick up young girls. I mean, listen, I can see how President Trump, who stands accused of sexual assault by 16 women, finds it difficult to come out against Roy Moore. So, you know, Mitch McConnell, however, and the other leaders of the Senate could pledge to immediately expel him, even if they're forced to seat him. And then there would be some kind of special election, you know, down the road. So if they want to make a stand, they can make a stand. You know, I do think the Republican Party really has a moral decision here if they're going to be associated as being the party that stands up for child molesters, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, that's not going to play well in every other election that they're going to be up against. It may warm Bannon's heart, but it's certainly not going to help them with moderate Republican women in the suburbs or really a lot of women anywhere.
Well, Mike Dorning, we've got Judge Moore still using Mike Lee's photo, Utah Senator Mike Lee, who has said that he is not supporting Judge Moore anymore. We also have Judge Moore saying publicly that when asked about dating young girls, I always ask their mother, and it wasn't customary for me to do that. I mean, there are a lot of kind of sort of fascinating nuances to this, but there's also Brett Talley, and I'd like you to comment on that. That is President Trump appointing as a federal judge Brett Talley, who literally has not tried any single cases, was unanimously rated not qualified by the American Bar Association, and actually has only practiced law for 3 years. This is a lifetime appointment. So a lot of this I'm conflating on purpose here because it stirred up a political hornet's nest, to put it mildly.
Yeah, that stirred up a sort of a hornet's nest among legal elites and people in Washington. I do think the real political danger is with Roy Moore, both in the short term and this election. One thing that you have to remember in special elections is the turnout becomes very important because it's not a habitual election. So if you have a piece of the Republican coalition that's just deciding, screw it, I don't want to bother turning out, because people have a choice in election. It's not just whether to vote for the Democrat or to vote for the Republican. It's for Republicans to say there's only one race on the ballot. This guy seems to me to be a child molester. I don't want to vote for the Democrat, but I got other things to do on that day, so I'm not going to bother voting at all.
Well, wait, could there be a write-in Luther Strange effort or something along those lines?
There could be.
And that would maybe make it go to Dave Jones, the Democrat candidate, wouldn't it, possibly?
It could. And also a lot of establishment Republicans not bothering to vote could make it go to Democrat. But in these special elections, it becomes much, much more important than in most elections to turn people out. And you can essentially suppress people's motivation if it's someone you feel so uncomfortable with that the Senate Majority Leader is saying, well, I believe these allegations, and then you'll potentially have more Republicans saying, I believe these allegations. Conversely, there's something going on in America right now that makes this of greater danger to the Republican brand even than you would think it would be, and that's all the long-delayed reckoning for sexual harassment against women in the workplace, whether it be Harvey Weinstein or Kevin Spacey, in that case, it not being women who are the victim, but at the moment, we've seen lots of people who have waited for decades to bring up allegations because they were intimidated and ashamed because of the way the abusers treated them. So that particular defense risks alienating more people than it might under current circumstances. And just in this last election in Virginia, you were seeing signs that the Trump brand is hurting Republicans with suburban people, and particularly women. The the portion of women who are voting Republican in Virginia was lower than it was when Hillary Clinton was running. So all these things come together to, A, make it a bigger risk even than in the past for the Republican brand, and it's never great to have someone who people believe to be a child molester to be one of your prominent spokesmen. But it's in this particular election, under its circumstances, and also in the coming election, it's of greater danger than it ordinarily would be.
Mike Dorning, I know we have to say goodbye to you, but I want to express thanks for your being with us. Appreciate it very much. Mike Dorning, again, is Bloomberg White House editor, and he joined us from Washington, D.C. We're going to continue with our guests, Michael Warren and Clara Jeffrey. In fact, Clara, if I can go back to you, there is, I don't know how accurate polling is in Alabama, but there are polls that seem to reveal that people are going to stand behind Roy Moore, and they see a lot of interference from, again, the swamp or whatever you want to call it.
There's been, so far as I know, one poll that's kind of come out since all of this broke, in that the people were asked these questions. And what's interesting in that poll is that Doug Jones is now actually ahead. So that's data point number one.
Only a few points, though.
Only a few points, and it's only one poll. But what you're referring to is that I believe it 29% of Republican Alabamans say they're more likely to vote for Moore because of these accusations. And
forgive me, that's true of evangelicals, too.
And I mean, 37% of white evangelicals in Alabama. Now, you know, I don't believe they actually want a child molester in office, but I think that they believe that these accusations are concocted, and that's, of course, what Moore is going to try and put out there. As Mike referred to, though, when you have so many people coming forward in all, you know, walks of life and in all these different fields talking about how they were molested or attacked or harassed, and they buried it for a long time, that defense, which is never a great one, has even less validity now. You know, and also this is only day three. Who knows what else is going to come out, including looking over Moore's record and how he's ruled in various cases. There's already some really troubling indication that he sided on behalf of people in kind of sexual abuse cases that were seen as questionable at the time and look even worse now.
Well, let me do this. We're coming up on a break here. We are going to talk about tax reform, too. But I'd like to hear from you, our listeners, on the two topics that we have just talked about with Michael Warren, Mike Dorning, and Clara Jeffrey, and your thoughts and any questions you might have, not only about the ongoing concern about the president's trip and what happened as a result, particularly the meeting with Vladimir Putin in Vietnam, but also the nomination of Judge Moore as a Senate candidate to fill Jeff Sessions' Senate seat in Alabama. You can join us toll-free right now at 866-733-6786. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. We also welcome your emails. And you can email us, forum at kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's at kqedforum. We do want to hear from you. Let us know your thoughts, questions, or comments. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and if you've just joined us, we're talking national politics, a news roundup this hour, China, and Republican nomination of Judge Roy Moore in Alabama, and also tax reform. We are going to go to your calls and emails, but I did want to talk about tax reform, and let me begin with you on this, Michael Warren, if I may. We've got a split between the House and the Senate here, and there's talk about actually getting the House bill through by the end of this week. First of all, is that likelihood? And what's the likelihood of there? And what's the nature of the split?
It's likely, I think, at this point, getting out of the Ways and Means Committee, as the tax bill did last week, was a good sign for passing it in the House. But there's, of course, all of these questions that remain, whether or not the particular reforms either A, go far enough for some members of the Republican conference, or B, go too far for others. This is a big problem policy-wise, is that in trying to get broad tax reform, which is something that Paul Ryan and other Republican leaders have been talking about for years, really talking about all year this year as a real opportunity, has been pared down significantly because of concerns about getting rid of certain deductions to shore up revenue for cuts to the corporate rate, cuts to the individual rate, and also narrowing down those different tax brackets. I think the biggest problem you'll see is that reconciling it with the Senate bill comes from these particulars. For instance, the child tax credit, something that a number of senators like Marco Rubio, Mike Lee from Utah, have been pushing to be bigger. The House bill has pretty much given a nominal increase to that tax credit. It's hard to say whether or not that will be the particular breaking point, but there are breaking points, I think, across this reform that really put it in question. On the other hand, there is a big push from the White House to bring along Democrats in red states that Donald Trump won. I think ultimately now it's a question of whether or not there is enough political juice from the White House as well as from Mitch McConnell. Perhaps interestingly, the Roy Moore question, whether or not that seat does go Democratic or portends poorly for Republicans in 2018, that could increase the sense of urgency among Republicans to put aside these quibbles about the details to get something passed. The problem ultimately there is that you could pass something that becomes a millstone around the neck of a Republican. The GOP is just not in a very good place right now. Their back's up against the wall with 2018 coming in just a few months.
Michael Warren, again with us from Washington, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and Clara Jeffrey here with us in studio is editor-in-chief of Mother Jones, and they're a San Francisco-based national magazine specializing in investigative, political, and social justice reporting. And what about, well, both the political and the social justice elements of this, Claire? I mean, on the one hand, you've got Republicans who are rebelling that there's going to be too much of a deficit in this, and at least three have come out recently and spoke about that. But you've also got the fact that, and I wonder if this even played into Virginia, the sense that they're not buying, the citizenry is not buying that this is going to be a break for the middle class, that it's mainly a corporate tax break and a tax break for the rich.
And they're right. I mean, there's really nothing that, there's a few particulars that help middle class people in a few places, but there are some big wallops to the middle class and not many gains. And there's just been some lunacy in this whole thing all along. I mean, they think they've stripped this out now, but when the Republicans were trying to take out the adoption credit, you know, it's just like, I don't get how a party that, is anti-abortion and not very favorable to contraception, then also wants to penalize people who adopt children. I mean, it's just nuts. I think the state and local tax issue, where essentially, mostly coastal Republicans' constituencies would be really hurt by this provision if it goes through, to not allow those to be deducted from your federal tax bill. I mean, that's a big time bomb that will go off in 2018 if they pass it. So it's again, I think that there is enormous pressure from the donor class and just from a sense of, impotency to pass something. But how they do that without making their political problems worse, I'm just not sure. And I we'll see what if any Democrats go along with any part of this.
Well, some comments are coming in, and I want to read them, and then I'm going to go to your phone calls. The listener writes, I did not hear of progress of any serious subjects facing the United States, including the extremely high trade deficit with China, Japan, and other countries. There was no peaceful solution to the North Korea predicament either. In fact, Donald Trump and this trip appeared less than statesmen. Here's Robert, who writes, how astounding is it that we offer a collective yawn as Trump warmly embraces a leader responsible for mass murder in the Philippines? And another listener tweets, I hadn't heard about Moore going to malls and high school football games. How are Fox and Breitbart covering those allegations? Will moderate Republican wives hear about them? What do you think, Clara Jeffrey?
I think that there's going to be a real problem with women in Alabama, but the even bigger problem is going to be how this plays out with women in other elections. I mean, as you see, women have had it. And this is going to be yet another thing that angers them, not only to vote against candidates and parties that back this kind of behavior, but I think, you know, in the long run, what's really great about it is it's invigorating a lot of women to run for office. And we saw that in Virginia as well, that many of the people, it wasn't just the women voters that put them over the top. It was female candidates.
What do you make though, women are casting themselves into elections as never even before imagined. And Emily's list is getting, you know, calls like crazy. But what do you make out of the fact that 54% of white American women voted for Trump despite the Hollywood access?
Yeah, and that is shameful. However, we are, you know, whenever that statistic comes up, you have to point out that there are, more than or half the country is Republican. And I think people voted for their team, for their tribe.
It's also enmity against Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, enmity against Hillary Clinton. And there was a lot of other factors at play, as we know.
Let's go to our callers. Dan, let's go to you first. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a deep concern here with the way your guest is speaking and referring interchangeably to Mr. Moore as alleged sex offender and then speaking as if it's a confirmed fact. This is just not right. We have a system to determine that.
Innocent until proven guilty, Dan. You're right. There's no...
A little bit more than that. We need to constantly not just say those words. We need to not think that alleged means guilty, as it's portrayed when we see someone robbing someone in a video on TV and they call him the alleged suspect. We need to really be careful here. Very uncomfortable. Politics is important. I'm a Lib Dem. I don't like Moore. I want him to go down. But what's more important is our system.
All right, I appreciate that comment. Although alleging is a word that doesn't necessarily carry guilt with it. It may in some people's minds, but alleged means just alleged. But let me bring some more of your calls on. Let me go next to you. Mustafa, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Maybe this relates a little bit earlier to the adoption credit that was mentioned. I was hoping we could talk a little bit about just the moral and intellectual rot at the center of the Republican Party right now. How do we relate to voters that are backing a pedophile? How do we square the fact that the Republican Party is clearly working for the donor class? Just wanted to touch on these things.
All right. Well, again, he's not been proven a pedophile. But Michael Warren, let me get your response.
Well, I think the Republican Party on taxes is made up of different constituent groups and interest groups. And I don't mean that in necessarily a negative way. That's how parties are constituted, with different people with different motivations and interests. I mean, the adoption tax credit is a perfect example. You have a big chunk of the party, particularly the donor class and others, who see these tax credits as a chance to raise revenue, to get tax cuts for businesses, for the corporate tax rate, as well as for individuals. But you also have, as Clara mentioned, a pro-life contingent within the party that was very motivated and very angry and really made a difference, I think, in forcing the House Republicans to restore that adoption tax credit. This is the problem that you have when you have a big party that has these different constituent groups and they try to get something big done like tax reform. This is what I think makes a huge difference. And it is why I'm very skeptical tax reform can get done, at least in the big sweeping way that Republicans were hoping. This is a place where somebody in the White House, a Republican president who can mediate these differences and keep the focus on the big picture of getting something big done that can benefit, the most Americans. That's something that I think this president is, you know, uninterested in the details. We saw that during the Obamacare repeal debate as well, and really unable to make a comprehensive case. In fact, was making a case just last week, according to Democratic senators who were talking with him, that this bill would not benefit upper-class Americans at all, upper-income Americans at all. Well, Republicans have long made the case that a tax cuts that benefit the upper class can have trickle-down effects and have positive effects. The president, his own sort of false claim that this doesn't help upper-income Americans hurts the larger Republican argument. And I think that's a problem that Republicans are seeing now, in addition to all of these other internal fights over the details.
We are, and if I may pick up on what Michael Warren just said, Clara Jeffrey, talking about a tax proposal that really is another form of supply-side or trickle-down economics, aren't we?
Right. It seems to be pretty much that. I mean, we'll see what comes when they try and unite the two bills. But, you know, I think another big problem that, again, it's Trump is in many ways the sort of moral rot at the center of the Republican Party. And let's just talk about the fact that we don't know how this tax bill, any of these proposals, would benefit him. What we do know, one part we do know, is that, you know, his children would get something like $620 million in savings from the estate tax. So that's just what we do know of his finances. So, again, he's sort of this weird black hole that I think sucks, you know, legitimate conservative attempts at policy into it, because there's no there really, and what is there is just morally suspect.
Shouldn't we also mention that there are strong financial interests of the Trump family in the Philippines?
Sure, and, you know, probably in Russia.
Well, definitely.
Well, we know
with
Jared there is. Yeah. That came out last week too.
Well, you remember Donald Trump Jr. saying about how it was disproportionate, the number of investments in Russia a number of years ago. Let me go back to you, though, Michael Warren. I'd like to hear what you have to say about why the Republicans don't seem, getting back to tax reform and their strong push to get some piece of legislation through, why they're not more focused on deficits.
This is nothing new with Republicans, who maybe speak tough about deficits in elections, but ultimately focus more on tax cuts for growth. This is going all the way back to the Reagan administration. And this is something that, you know, for all the talk about cutting government and certainly conservatives like us at the Weekly Standard are calling for cuts like that, and particularly for entitlement reform, which is actually the biggest drag on the federal budget and will continue to suck up a lot of the discretionary spending, that it's very politically difficult to do so. Again, I keep going back to this well, but this would require, say, a Republican president who really did believe in deficit cutting. This is not a Republican president who believes that. And doing so, again, politically difficult, requires putting political capital on the table and spending it. This is a president who doesn't have much political capital. He's got slim margins in the Senate, slimmer than you think margins in the House. He's personally very unpopular. So it's very difficult. I do want to say very quickly, though, one thing, just to go back to the question of Roy Moore and innocent until proven guilty and these sort of things. And I think that's in the question of legally and in a court of law, that is true. But elections aren't about that. Don't rise to that level of convicting in a court of law. This is a question that voters ask, regardless of these sorts of allegations. And if the allegations seem credible, which again, Republican senators are now saying that they believe them. I certainly believe them. They seem more credible than Roy Moore's denials of them. Voters can make that decision, even if there has not been a decision in a court of law, and in fact, the burden.
Is that what we mean by the court of public opinion?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, let me actually go ahead, Clara. You wanted to add something.
Well, I would just add, right? I mean, you know, when a lawyer and a judge, when asked if he engaged in, you know, sexual relations with young girls, says it's not my custom to do so. I mean, that is, like, you know, depends on what the definition of is lawyering. And, you know, it doesn't take a genius to know that he's being very careful not to, while inveighing against the women who are alleging these things, he's being very careful not to make any specific statements on certain fronts.
Well, there's a comment from a listener named Steve. He says, beyond any broken laws, it's just creepy that a 32-year-old guy is dating or was dating teenage girls. I don't want any more creeps in office. It's a strong opinion from a listener there. Also, since we're talking about financial interests here, I just wonder if I could go to you, Michael Warren, on, well, you know, there's been a lot of debate about emoluments and just how much Trump is benefiting financially with respect to, we mentioned, the Philippines and Russia and so forth. But there's also, I think, tax benefits for Trump in the proposal that's being put through here for the Trump family, for the Trump dynasty, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, look, I think that is a concern that continues whether or not tax reform gets passed or not. We don't have the information that we have customarily had for presidential candidates regarding his tax returns. Unfortunately, I don't think we're ever going to have that again. There's no the precedent has now been broken, and there is a larger concern.
Forgive me, Michael. I'm sorry, but don't you think that Special Investigator Mueller has access to those tax returns? Wouldn't he?
Perhaps he does, and maybe we will find out that information. Although I guess he's under no obligation to provide that information if he has it. But if there are concerns and related to his investigation, which is broad and could have a bearing on some indictments, then maybe we will find that out. And I think it's worth knowing. I think it's worth knowing exactly. This is a family and a group of people that have a lot of financial interests. The president himself argued this was a case for his presidency on the campaign trail, that he understands how to use government to benefit himself, and that's why that was one of his selling points. I don't think that's something that people around him and his family. There's this kerfuffle several months ago about a sister of Jared Kushner, the son-in-law of Donald Trump, who is in the White House, sort of talking up her White House connections while talking with investors in China. I think it's a big and deep concern. It's one that is maybe not appreciated and covered enough, but certainly deserves to be.
Well, Bill raises a question here. He says, how much would Trump himself save under the pending tax bill? Eliminating the alternative minimum tax and estate tax must be a windfall for him, and still no new jobs created. I'm going to go to another caller here. But before I do that, actually, what do you think, Claire Jeffrey, about the fact that Sean Hannity is losing advertising, supposedly, due to the Roy Moore interview that he did? His viewers are boycotting some of the companies in response. Is this going to amount to anything, do you think?
Well, I guess we're going to see a lot of people smashing their coffee machines on Twitter. I mean, you know, I think that Fox has historically faced and is facing, a lot of pressure around advertisements. But, you know, it still has a huge audience, and somebody will probably slip into the spaces that those who leave vacate. As an economic pressure point, I think it is a valid one for viewers to do. I think the larger question of what Fox is going to do really comes down to this whole question of succession going on in that company and the Sky deal and all of that stuff that we probably don't have time to get into.
No, that's a whole hour in itself. But you were referencing the coffee maker company Keurig, who pulled out of the Hannity show. Just wanted to clarify, and maybe they will be smashing their coffee machines. In the meantime, let's go to more calls, and John joins us. John, you're on.
Hi. I had a comment on the tax reform discussion, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah.
It's very complicated. It takes many years for these things to work out, and one thing I've been looking at is what happened in the Republic of Ireland. When it joined the EU, the per capita income was very, very low, and people had to emigrate to England to get a job when they were 14. Ireland joined the EU and lowered the corporate tax rate. They attracted Microsoft, Nike, and a bunch of other corporations. Today, they're being sued by EU because of the billions of dollars that have increased in their economy. And now we have people emigrating from England to Dublin to get a job because the wage rates are higher and the middle class. In fact, real estate in Ireland is almost obscene.
Yeah, John, let me jump in here because, you're raising a question that's come up before, and I'd like to hear what Michael Warren and Clara Jeffrey have to say about it. I mean, the argument is often, Michael Warren, that Ireland is evidence that tax breaks or tax cuts work.
Yes, the Celtic Tiger, as it was called in the 1990s. And, of course, Ireland had very, very high and still has, by American standards, very high income tax rates. This is the case being made by Republicans that the corporate tax rate is much too high. It makes us uncompetitive with all of these other countries that do have lower corporate income tax rates. Those countries often have higher higher personal individual income tax rates. I think there is a case to be made for that the corporate tax rate ought to be lowered. There's a case to be made for a simplified individual tax system. Where,
yeah, but forgive me, if you want to use Ireland as an example, you're going to have to go to Kansas to see almost the counterpoint of that example, where tax cuts were very much a part of the plan and everything that the Republicans have put forward, and on a state level, it didn't work. In fact, quite the contrary.
That's right. I mean, there is a question of diminishing returns for tax breaks. So I think there's a bigger problem here within the Republican Party, which is a kind of lack of creativity among policy types about thinking of better ways to approach tax reform, not simply cuts. For instance, the payroll tax is much too high, and cutting the payroll tax would be a much better benefit to middle class taxpayers, the people who say, well, you know, there's so many people in the country who don't pay any income taxes, so how can we cut their tax rates? That's just not true. And the payroll tax, everybody pays the payroll tax, and it would be something that could benefit a lot of people. But again, would also require, I think, on the revenue side, some real tough entitlement cuts that reform the system and preserve the system for future Americans. There just doesn't seem to be any political appetite for that, particularly not with a Republican president who doesn't want to touch it at all.
Michael Warren, again, senior writer for Weekly Standard. Let me go back to Clara Jeffrey, editor-in-chief Mother Jones.
Well, I agree with Michael that this seems to be a sort of weird mishmash of old ideas, not a lot of new ideas, and where Michael and I would probably disagree on what those new ideas should be.
You're not the payroll tax on board there.
Well, or I'm certainly not for cutting entitlements in the way that I would guess that Michael is suggesting, but. But I do think that there are creative solutions being put forward by, you know, people from, you know, all different kind of ideological stripes. And if we were really serious about creating a real tax reform, maybe a deal could be hammered out. But I don't think it's going to be hammered out with Donald Trump as president, for all the reasons that Michael said. And I think that there's a real kind of lack of visionary leadership in the House and Senate GOP leadership as well.
Let me thank the caller and go to another of your calls. Morris from Sunnyvale joins us. Morris, you're on the air.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure being here, and thank you for your show. I am a Democrat, and I am also a capitalist. I believe in the capitalistic system. If we gave money to people who would spend it, I mean, remember that this country was built on commerce and on a large market. Everybody wants to get into this market. People spend money in this market. If you give the working class money to spend, it is the multiplier that makes the economy run. Number two, corporations are already getting huge breaks. Look at Microsoft and all the money they've hoarded offshore. The apportionment laws should be changed such that we get that the U.S. economy tax system gets the money that these corporations are producing, rather than having them squirrel it away in some foreign country. And I'll take my comments on the air.
All right. I thank you for those comments. Michael Warren?
Yeah, look, I think that this is this sort of reflects another side of the kind of populist frustration that's going on in the country. There are efforts, I think, whether you look at money back. The Republican argument has always been that if you cut corporate rates where they are, it sort of changes incentives of those corporations, not just big corporations who, as the caller correctly says, do find ways to pay lower rates, but smaller corporations, the sort of medium-sized, small-sized businesses. This is something that I think Republicans truly believe. But again, I to reiterate what I said earlier in the program, you have to make an intellectual and political case for that. And I think what I'm seeing politically is a sort of Republican leadership in the House and Senate sort of just taking that as a given, that the you know, not making a political case, but taking as a given that this is what people voted for in November 2016. I don't really remember that being prominent on among the issues that were discussed in the presidential race. And then a president who really has no sort of detailed interest in making that political case as well. And policy, I think, withers in that dynamic.
Yeah, it's an important point, Clara Jeffrey. That this kind of tax reform wasn't part of the populist Trump or Trump vision that came across in the election.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, certainly not some of the kind of old standby policies that the GOP leadership is moving towards. I mean, you know, and I think to the caller's point, I would urge people to think about, you know, whether you're talking about cuts to corporations or cuts to income tax, but particularly to cuts to your household. That's only one piece of it. It's also the services that are provided, whether or not interest rates rise as a result of servicing the debt and the deficit. So a cut can seem good, but you're paying more on the back end.
Well, we'll leave it there. Clara Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us this hour. And thank you, Michael Warren. Clara Jeffrey, again, is editor-in-chief of Mother Jones. And Michael Warren, senior writer, at Weekly Standard. Another hour of the forum program is coming up. We're going to talk to author John Bateson, who wrote a book all about the education of a coroner. That's the title of the book. And Ken Holmes, former Marin County coroner. From 1999 to 2010, there are some really amazing stories in here, as you might imagine. So we'll be talking about them in the hour ahead. Stay tuned for that, and thank you for being a part of this hour for all of us at KQED. By the way, you can continue the education, kqed.org, conversation, kqed.org.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.